Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. Our continuing 2018-19 preseason coverage. I am way up here up top, your host, Chad Sherwood, coming to you Brady Bunch style. We've got David Griggs and John Stalica in the top row. We've got John Tytel, Matt Sikowski on the sides and the middle there. We've got Joby Forts all the way down the bottom. In the center square, we've got Shadow Stevens. I mean, Rocco Miller. I think we've got everybody.
Live on tape delay.
Yes. We are recording this, by the way, on Thursday, October 18th. So when all the breaking news comes out about ineligible players and who knows, you know, stories about Zion Williamson being named in FBI trials and stuff like that. If it comes out after tonight, excuse us for not having mentioned it. However, this is our Big East preview show, and let's get right on into it. The Big East had a decent little season last year, and Rocco, let me start with you. You were down at our center square there. How about the Big East this year? Are we going to see a 2-1 season national champion again?
I don't think so, Chad. I think we're going to see a couple of different tiers, but probably just a couple. And that would just be one with Villanova still at the top, and then another with DePaul still at the bottom, and then everybody else in the middle trying to figure it out. I think there's just a lot of turnover. There's a team that Matt I know wants to talk about that has a possible player of the year candidate coming back and a really good supporting cast that wants to make a leap up in the standings and get to the tournament. Xavier breaks in a new coach, and Butler's always feisty, and then St. John's has a really big impact transfer that's going to make them pretty relevant as well. So we have a lot to cover.
Well, we do have a lot to cover here, and Tytel, let me turn to you here. Start with the defending national champions from Villanova, 2 out of 3 years now. I know you've got some Philly ties, and they have a pretty darn good head coach there, I think we can all could see now, but what do we see for this team coming back this year?
We see a little uncertainty only because when they won it in 2016, they didn't do so well in 2017 before getting back up top in 2018. They lost a ton of talent from last year, notably Dante and Jalen and others. Like, he took a hit, Omari Spellman, I believe. They do bring back a lot of talent, especially senior class, Phil Booth in the backcourt, Eric Paschal in the frontcourt. A couple of new additions that caught my eye, a freshman McDonald's All-American, Javon Quinterly, formerly of the University of Arizona before he decided to get the hell out of Tucson, and Joe Cremo, who came over as a transfer from Albany. He's a third-generation Albany guy, so I'm kind of surprised he didn't stay for his life in Albany. Forget his career, his life. But I guess he wants a ring, and obviously if you want to win a ring in this decade, Philly's the best place to do it.
Yeah. Matt, how about that? Joe Cremo, I heard word that, you know, after Reed Travis, this is one of the most highly sought after grad transfers this year.
Oh, yeah, he'll fit in perfectly kind of in that Dante DiVincenzo role. Probably is, I guess, 6-man off the bench and then at the 2-3 spots. But no, he fits in perfectly. Perimeter shooter, helps him spread the floor. And that, I think, will fit seamlessly in for Nova and be a key guy, probably about 10 points a game pretty efficiently. And I think won't be a huge loss there in that role, at least for the college level. I mean, he won't be Dante DiVincenzo in the pros and make Dante DiVincenzo money. But in college, I think he can make a similar impact for Nova.
Well, the other one seed we had last year, Stalica, was your team, the Xavier Musketeers, who welcomed a new head coach. But that's never been a problem in Xavier, at least as long back as I can remember.
Yeah, you have to go back to Bob Stack when the coaching tree started and eventually begat Pete Gillen, who begat Skip Prosser, then a brief trip out of the family for Thad Matta, who begat Sean Miller, who begat Chris Mack, who's now begat Travis Steele. And this was another little ditty that we saw from Ken Pomeroy's Twitter earlier today. I believe he's only the fourth coach who has ever been a new coach following the year where a team was a one seed in the NCAA tournament. Other notables would be Bill Guthridge at North Carolina in 1998, Joey Meyer, DePaul in 1995. But one comparison we hope we don't see is Bruiser Flint at UMass in 1997.
You don't want
any of those comparisons. Rogues gallery of bad.
Great job.
Oh, Guthridge, he lasted like a year. I mean, oh.
I don't know. I set you up for the Pete Gillen, Skip Prosser, Thad Mata statements, and you went there, Sleek. I'm not necessarily what happened.
But the thing is, it's actually following a similar blueprint to what Xavier has had in recent years. They're still going to have a talented core that includes Najee Marshall, Paul Scruggs, Tyreek Jones, and Quentin Gooden. But you've also got some graduate transfers, notably Zach Hankins from Ferris State, who seems to be, in Joby's words, a typical plug-and-play center. So he follows in the shoes of Rashid Gaston and Karim Kanter from last year. But also keep a couple eyes on other guys, including Castlin from, Columbia, and Brian Wellage from San Jose State, who are going to be moving from the outhouse to the penthouse, in a manner of speaking.
Really? Moving from San Jose State to Xavier is an upgrade, huh? David, did you know that?
Yes, it is. The question, like San Jose State, there's Division II teams that moving to would be an upgrade.
But David, seriously.
They have that too.
For the Mountain West. But anyway. Real mountainous out in San Jose.
Xavier, you know, three double-digit scorers gone. How good is this team going to be this year?
Not as good as they've been the last 3 years, certainly. I know that they were a protected seed 3 years ago, went out in the round of 32, were a bubble team 2 years ago, went to the Elite Eight, were a one seed last year, went out in the round of 32. So kind of doing it backwards there. I think that if Xavier makes the tournament at all, gets any seed at all, it would be – you have to feel pretty good about how you did this year, because, like you said, of everything they lost, including the head coach. Now, I do think Travis Steele will do a really good job in time, but, I mean, to expect Xavier to be in the rankings all year long and getting a protected seed, it's just not going to happen this year. If they make the tournament, I think that is a reasonable goal, and if they reach it, then you have to be feeling pretty good about yourself.
Now, by the same token, Xavier wasn't exactly blowing everybody away last year. Let's not forget, even with guys like Blewett and McCure at the helm, they still found themselves down by 22 points against East Tennessee State at one point, down 16 at home against DePaul. But fortunately, they were, except for March, winning all the close games last year. But will that be the same story this year? Most likely not.
Yeah, that's a good – I'd forgotten about that DePaul game. That was a good point.
And we'll talk about DePaul at some point during the show, I think. But Matt, I know you had a few comments about Xavier as well, I think.
Yeah, that's the one. I am with David in that. And, like, I actually do not expect them to make the tournament. I think they'll be an NIT team, but no, they're going to take a big step back. The loss, I think, that hasn't really been mentioned, but I think is Kaiser Gates. And he stayed. I think he would have blossomed and could have provided a lot of the scoring of Blewett and Makura. With him gone now, too, you're asking the kid from San Jose State, Wellingy, to basically come into that role, and that's a huge step up. He was really good at San Jose State in the Mountain West, which isn't that far off the Big East, but still, I think that's a huge ask for them. I'm not quite sure if, Gooden, Scruggs, and Marshall just yet, who's going to be the lead scorer of that? Scruggs is the only one I'd really bet on. It's just a team, it looks like. I think it's a fairly decent step back to something like 17, 18 wins out of the year, maybe about 7 or 8 in the Big East.
Well, Joby, let me turn to you. We've talked to Villanova. We've talked Xavier. Who is going to be challenging for the top of the league? I think we think that Villanova might be there, but who else do you see up at the top of this conference this year?
I think this conference is similar to the Big 12 in two respects. The Big 12 podcast we did last week, I'd suggest everybody to tune into it. In that, you have one team that I think, in Rocco hinted at this, there is one team that is dominant, much like Kansas in the Big 12. I think Villanova, even with their losses to the NBA, is still head and shoulders above everybody else. The other component of this is the league as a whole is not as deep and will take a step back. They will lose quite a few bids from the last few years. Who is that team? I actually do think that the better person to answer that is our panelist, Matt, because that is who I would put my money on Wojo's in his fifth year. I think he's getting it together. I really love, obviously everybody loves Howard, but I like Hauser a lot. And Hauser had almost 49% three-point shooting, and he's not afraid to put it up. This is a guy who puts it up 49%. Do you know what the college basketball record for a career is on three-point shooting? It's 49.7 by Tony Bennett, by the way. that's why I would know it. But I like this inside-outside sort of game that they can develop. Wojo has this team going, has had the program. He's built it the right way. He's done it over time. It's brick by brick. It's now a solid foundation. Marquette is where I would place my who can challenge Villanova question and answer to.
Well, Matt, they are your team, so I'll give you another second here. Let's talk about this Marquette team a little bit more. You got Howard, you got Hauser, you don't have Andrew Rousey. They didn't make the tournament last year.
Missed last year. They made it 2 years ago, didn't make last year.
So why are they so good this year?
I think you returned everyone but Rousey. And Rousey, for as much as he can sometimes give you on offense, especially when he gets hot, was hideous defensively. Like, you might as well throw me out there. You would have the same effect defensively, save a couple less seals. Like, he was awful. And actually, Marquette, for as awful as their defensive efficiency was last year, when you took Rousey out of the lineup, it was somewhere bordering on okay to not great, but not hideous. And that instead, you replaced Rousey with one of the best defensive players of the A-10 last year, Joseph Chardonnay. Also pass first, which I think will help. Rousey and Howard sometimes alternated who was the man, who was putting up shots, and sometimes they're both shot hunting instead of trying to get others involved. Now you got a pure point guard in Chardonnay. You got Nebraska transfer Ed Morrow. And the kid who's really sounded good from the summer and the preseason is Mormon kid Brendan Braley, coming off a two-year Mormon mission. Was a top 50 kid when he signed with Marquette, chose him over Michigan and Gonzaga. Really high-level shooter, decent athlete, and I think actually he'll step in nicely with Hauser at the 3 and 4 spots. And I think might even start from day one. He's been that good in practice.
Tytel, do you agree with him? Do you think this Marquette team is without Ranger Rousey, is actually a better team?
Without him, no. I mean, he was a great college player. I don't think he's going to make it in the next level because of the height, but the heart is there and the shot is there. Chardonnay is a great X factor just because he led the nation in steals last year, over 3 a game. So it's one thing to have all these scores. We know Hauser can make threes, and I think that his brother Joey can too, but to have the defense and the offense together will help replace a guy like Rousey. I think they're making the tournament, but I don't see this as like a top 20 team per se.
Well, if it's not going to be Marquette, Rocco, is there another team you're looking at in the Big East here?
Yeah, I mean, I think Marquette, yeah, I agree, is probably second on my pecking order right now. I also think Xavier is right there, just because, in my opinion, Xavier is going to be a team that reminds me of what Butler went through last year when Jordan took over as head coach, and there wasn't a big drop-off. He kept the Butler way, quote-unquote, moving forward. And there's enough pieces, I think, at Xavier to give Travis Steele a nice transition. I'm pretty high on Quentin Gooden. Me and Stalika last year actually went to Xavier Marquette game out there in Cincinnati, and Gooden was phenomenal. I know he was in the shadow of Blewett last year, but I think he's got a ton of skill, probably going to be a next-level player and really emerge this year. I'm going off a really small sample size by just going to that game, but I really like the prospects for him. But right in that mix, I also have Butler, and I also have St. John's with the recent news that Huron's going to be available. So I don't know if we want to jump into Butler now, but
let's go Butler. Let's talk a little Butler. Tell me what you like about them.
Yeah, so with Butler, you know, I think they've got enough pieces coming back that they should be, you know, probably in that 8 to, 11 seed range. They're in the second year now under Jordan. They've got some pretty good balance within the lineup. Kamar Baldwin's a really good player. He's going to provide most of the scoring for them and also contributes on the rebounding end of the side of things. They'll get Jordan Tucker, a Duke transfer, later in the non-conference schedule, I think sometime in December. And then, and Sean McDermott's back. I can really shoot it. So I feel like they're a really balanced roster. They're comfortable with Jordan. And I really, certainly they could fall outside of the bubble, but right now, I, compared to the rest of the league, I got to feel good about Butler, I think.
David, what about your thoughts on this Butler team? Do you agree with Rocco, they're a tournament team?
I think that they could be, but again, I just still have more questions than answers about them. Yeah. If I had to guess, I think that they'll end up getting there. But again, I don't really expect them to be a first ballot team or so far in right now that you're expecting them to do much after they get there.
Well, I'll tell you the team that, I mean, Rocco hinted at them, but I really haven't mentioned yet that I am probably the most high on. More high than anybody else here is the St. John's team.
Oh,
between Shamari Pods, who I think is probably going to be your best player at the conference. Now we know that Heron is available. On top of that, you got guys like Justin Simon, Marvin Clark, Titel. What about the Johnnies? Do you think this is the year Chris Mullen gets them into the tournament?
Kill me. I got to talk about Devon Quinterly, formerly of Arizona. Now I got to talk about Justin Simon, formerly of Arizona. It's like we lost all our great players, it seems like. As Rocco said, Heron is going to be, I think, a big key. This is a guy
John, double you digits. You lost all your great players. You did.
Heron is a key. He comes from Auburn. He had 12 points in the tournament last year when they got destroyed by Clemson. So he's proven that he can play at the highest level. They have, I think, too many transfers. Marvin Clark, Michigan State. We mentioned Simon. Mikey Dixon comes over from Quinnipiac. Like, I know that they have talent on paper. I don't know that I'm believing that Chris Mullen can get it all together this year. The good news, most of them not seniors. So I think next year they might make the leap. I don't think this is the year, though.
There were flashes in the pan last year with St. John's. There was one stretch where they were, you could argue, winning two road games at the Garden against Duke and also at Villanova at the Wells Fargo Center. Even a game without Shamori Pons, they actually beat Butler at home, but they've been pretty inconsistent for the past 3 to 4 years in the Chris Mullen regime. But is this going to be a now or never season for the Johnnies?
They had two of the most remarkable wins, probably the singular most remarkable win of all of last season at Villanova. And they didn't. They were so excited that they didn't win anybody else.
My big concern here, it's great. You know, hey, when you add a talent like Mustafa Heron, that's great. You know, it's usually nothing but a positive. But he plays almost the identical position as Pons. I mean, it is going to be a fight for shots. It is going to be a fight for maybe even time to a degree. I don't know. This is where I think Titel pretty much nailed it. I have problems with seeing them gel this year. And maybe next year it'll be a different story as the talent and they feel each other out. But I think it's going to be not rough. There's too much talent for it to be the early years of Chris Mullen's tenure. But I don't think that the pieces will be greater than the whole in this particular case.
Okay. You don't foresee them losing to Fordham by 20 and complaining about how the Rams ran up the score on them.
Yeah, I think the other thing that needs to be noted about St. John's is they have one of the worst schedules in all of Power 6 basketball. They will not, on paper, play a tournament team until Big East play starts. So that you can look at that one of two ways. Obviously, that's really bad for the resume at the end of the year, but it could be really good for a team with so many transfers and so many scores to try to work it out against teams like Maryland Eastern Shore and Mount St. Mary's and Rutgers, no offense, Chad. But, yeah, I think, you know, you could almost look at this. you could almost look at this schedule as a opportunity for them to really gel by the time their games are going to start to matter.
So if Seton Hall could lose at the rack last year, I mean – you really think St. John's could overlook a game like that?
Not yet. You're right.
I don't know. I think that when you're playing against teams that are weaker than your practice team, I just don't think you're getting any better. I understand the thought process. I understand the logic. I just don't really agree with it. You've got to – I mean, people said the same thing about Georgetown last year, and at no point was I convinced that they're still anything.
Well, I'll tell you what. exactly.
Georgetown won five. They won five Big East games last year, which I think is better than we all thought.
Let's keep things moving here. Matt, let me bring you back in. We've talked about half of the Big East already. Is there anybody else that we haven't discussed yet that you think might be a tournament caliber team this year?
It's 2-1. I think it's clear. I'm surprised we haven't. That's Providence.
Providence, yes.
Five straight years. And they bring a fair amount back. They have a real good freshman class. They have a great coach. Like, I have Providence actually third in my Big East predictions. And that I think they could be solo third in about 11 or 7. So, like, yeah, you bring to Alpha Diallo, Nate Watson. If you get Emmett Holt, even if he isn't what he was 2 years ago, still, then I think Mekhi Ashton-Lakeford takes a big step up. Cooley always does a good job developing point guards. I think he's next in line. Struggled more than I would expect as a frosh, but I think now he'll get the keys with Kyron Cartwright graduated. I think it takes a big step up. And then they have a couple of nice freshmen, too. A.J. Reeves and the unfortunately named David Duke. But I think he might be good enough that, that hopefully he makes that name his and not the people most would think of. But Reeves will come in because he's a pretty good shooter. I think will complement some of the other guys and might even start from day one because I think that's the one thing they lack a little bit is a floor spacer. So if Reeves hits shots, he'll fit in nicely with Ashton Langford, Diallo, Watson, and that group.
I mean, personally, I don't think there's anything wrong with former Lehigh and Temple assistant Dave Duke.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. Tytel, I think my problem with Providence, I'm not that certain who the point guard is on this team, and I am with Emmett Holt's health uncertain. I'm not that certain. I think they need him, and I think they need him a lot, don't they?
No, I think they need Rodney Bullock and Kyron Cartwright, but they're not walking through that door because
well, that too.
They're going to suffer because of that. I mean,
I think that's a touch addition by subtraction. Not horribly, but like, I think you redistribute it to more talented guys this year.
So Tytel, you don't agree with him or you do agree with him?
I respectfully think Matt's wrong. Call me in March. We'll see if he's right.
Well, I agree with Tytel on this one, actually. But Rocco, another team. What about the Creighton Blue Jays? And see any life out of them this year?
I don't. But,
go on. Great take. All right, who's next?
Well, I think it's just going to be too much to make up for guys like Marcus Foster and Kyrie Thomas. Ronnie Harrell and Toby Hegner were key contributors too. So I just think you don't know how Crample's going to come back from the ACL tear. They're mixing in some transfers. Connor Kashaw coming in from Rice. Damian Jefferson from New Mexico. Tyshawn Alexander could take a nice step up this year. But the thing about Creighton is they got that great home court advantage. So I do expect them to win probably at least seven or eight league games just from that home court. And they're not far from the rest of the middle of the pack, all these teams that we've just been discussing. So I don't want to pretend like they're down in DePaul's range because they're nowhere near that. But the reality is they're probably on the outside looking in most of the year, and they'll need a big there's going to be have to get some sort of surprise that we're not seeing on paper, in my opinion.
They also have some decent returners in Mitchell Ballack and Davion Mintz. And another right. Creighton tradition, there will be a mystery D2 opponent on their schedule sometime in December. And that would be co-college this year.
I think Creighton, when I look at them, I mean, I could see them starting off really hot and actually winning some of the games that's going to get them a lot of national attention. I mean, they might beat Ohio State, might beat Gonzaga. Then they're probably going to get in the conference play, probably win their first six or seven, get way ranked into the teens, and then February is going to roll around and they're going to lose eight in a row.
David, that's Creighton every year. But Tytel, I think you had a comment on Creighton also.
Rocco touched on what I want to say is Martin Krampeld, but is Martin Crumple. This is a kid from Slovenia. He was breaking out as a star last year before he had the ACL problem. I agree it's too early to tell if he's going to come back as a 5-point-a-game scorer or a 20-point-a-game scorer, but I think that the whole Creighton success season is riding on his knee.
I disagree with that because today we haven't mentioned Jacob Epperson. He was good at redshirt, but because of the Crample injury, came back, showed some nice flashes, and he was a top 100 kid coming out. Ideally would not have played last year, but now because he has some experience, I think he could be that next creative guy. Like, who the heck is this guy averaging like 13 and 8? I love Bollock and Alexander. I love that sophomore class. I actually have Creighton as my final Big East tournament team.
Oh, God.
Joe, what about Seton Hall? We have not yet discussed them. I mean, can Miles Powell just go ahead and cover, you know, and score 60 points a game?
They lost so much, you know, of teams that took them to three straight NCAA tournaments. No. This is a team I'm skeptical on. Creighton, as the fight or the discussion before me was, I think we have a similar story here with the Hall. I think they take they are a perfect example of the conference as a whole, to be very honest. A solid tournament team is going to turn into maybe I'll make the NIT, and because of their losses. It's kind of indicative of the whole conference. You know, you're not getting that sixth bid because it's Seton Hall who isn't worthy of it. And so Seton Hall, the Hall's going to have trouble this year. Luckily, they get two games against DePaul, though.
Well, and they also have a Syracuse transfer. I know you
love Syracuse. Tareen Thompson, who wasn't, in my opinion, lights out at Syracuse. And
I think that Quincy McKnight from Sacred Heart might be more of a factor for them than
maybe. Exactly right, Chad. Just because you had Syracuse on the jersey doesn't mean. I mean, Thompson wasn't. Yeah, he. It's not like it's not like battle transferred to him. I mean, I just don't see the big help. I'm not saying it's no factor, but it's pretty when you lose three just classic starters like they did. It's not enough. Powell's it, and Powell's a good player, but it's not enough.
Yeah, we're at Hall. I actually like some of the pieces, but I think what's hurting them is they couldn't get a point guard these last couple of years. That they missed out on Jose Alvarado and Isaiah Washington 2 years ago. They missed out on Quarterly last year. And that they needed one of those kids. You put one of them in there, actually might have Hall as a tournament team. Without it, though, I don't think you get the guy to get it to Miles Powell, Miles Kale, Torian Thompson, the other talented parts. I think they're just going to struggle without the lack of a point guard.
Well, Rocco, let me go back to you. You mentioned earlier that you don't put Creighton down in the DePaul range. I'm going to argue here that we may see the best Blue Demons team we have seen in years. I'm not saying we've got a tournament team. I'm not even saying we have a 500 team. But DePaul, Devin Gage back healthy. Let's Elon K move back over to the wing. You got Jalen Coleman-Lance coming over from Illinois. You got the North Carolina A&T transfer, Olajobi, who was one of the better players in the MEAC.
Yeah.
Maybe there is a little life in DePaul this year. They could pull off a few upsets, don't you think?
Okay, so they've got guys back from a team that was awful. They've got a transfer from Illinois who was awful, and they've got a MEAC guy.
David's on the right track here, I think. I think DePaul, you know, they're making a baby step up, and maybe their goal should be what Georgetown accomplished last year. Let's just try to win five league games. They win five league games, I think DePaul people internally would feel decent about themselves. I do think, you know, even a lot of all the pieces you mentioned are decent pieces. I think also Flynn Cameron redshirted last year. He's playing on the New Zealand national team. He's got a really good amount of international experience already, could give them a different look and flavor. Apparently can really shoot it. And I see the name Diener. I'm not sure how good of a prospect he is, but whenever you see that name Diener, this is John Diener coming to the freshman, you got to keep your eye on him. So there's some people to watch. They bring in four true freshmen, a redshirt freshman, plus the transfers you mentioned to go along with Kane, Struss, and Reed, and Butts, and Gage. So we'll see, but I can't – there's no way I'm picking them above 10th without seeing them play, you know, 5 or 10 games.
Joby, you want to join me on the 8th or 9th place DePaul bandwagon here?
No, there's a reason why Struss was, applied to the NBA and was told, dude, you went to DePaul, go back. and so he's back. No.
DePaul.
No, but I will say the team that might, you know, they might jump is that Seton Hall team that we just discussed if nothing comes together. So, you know, the league is weaker. Thus, there will be more opportunities to win. They have a new facility that will seat all 20 DePaul fans. And so –
and if the students get that elevated view.
And so all two of the students will show up. Yeah, I mean, no, they're not getting out of the cellar. But, there's more opportunities than there have been in the past. I mean, the Big East the last few years has been a murderer's row. It's not the murderer's row it's been.
Well, Tytel, you're in the D.C. area. How about the Georgetown Hoyas? They're, like we've mentioned, five conference wins last year, which is about six or seven more than I thought they would have. What about them this season?
I mean, the schedule is just fantastic. For those of you who need to get season tickets, I assure you that opposition with Richmond and Morgan State, I mean, it's going to be top-notch this year.
Not to mention they have a hot home day coming in December.
Yes!
Now, Tytel, what is the harder ticket to get right now, Georgetown home games or Howard home games?
I think Howard is the better team in terms of starting five. The excitement in Hoya land is, number one, Desi Govan could be – he really could be like the conference player of the year, because I think the whole offense is going to run through him, and I think he is capable of getting 20 and 10. And dare I say, like, he really looked great at times. Like, I think he might get drafted, but we're not there yet. The real excitement is the hotshot rookie, Mac McClung, coming north from Virginia. If you Google Mac McClung mixtapes, you'll be amazed by his dunking prowess. I don't know if he can do anything else, and I don't know if he's going to see any action on the court, but the kid can dunk.
They actually have two other freshmen I really like, James Akinjo, who originally signed with UConn, and then Josh LeBlanc, a southern kind of pogo stick kid who I think chose him over LSU, a few other SEC schools. I think both of those are nice pieces for the future. The Georgetown, this would have been a good team in Marcus Derrickson State. You'd add the freshman to Derrickson and Govan. But I think without Derrickson now, too much will be asked for Govan. They're going to be good. They're going to be frisky, dangerous. I think they'll be above five wins. I'm thinking like six or seven, but it's a shame. The Derrickson one, that I think is really the difference between, I think, would have contention for NCAA and probably NIT bubble.
Joby, how about your thoughts on Georgetown? I think you've had some good ones in the past.
I will not give my traditional answer. They will not suck this year, but what does suck is their schedule. We talked about, and Tytel went into it, we talked about maybe St. John's set their schedule up because of all the transfers and all this stuff. They want to build a team or whatever. What's Georgetown's excuse? There is a none. This is a pattern, and this is turning into Virginia Tech Seth Greenberg level, because this team might be able to win the games that Matt's talking about with Govan. I mean, he will be, at least in the conversation, as Tytel pointed out, the conference play of the year. I think it's no-brainer. He's going to be all Big East because of everything running through him, et cetera. I don't know if he has the help, but they're going to wind up close to 20 wins. Of course, how many of those will be outside? I know we don't have the net, you know, our RPI slash net top 300.
They won 16 last year.
You know, total, that's the problem. That's the problem. They will not make the tournament. They will not. And the predominant thing is, even if they go 500, they can't go 500 in the Big East this year and make the tournament. That's what's sad for their position. It's malpractice on the schedule.
And we all know, we all know this, and Tytel, I think, certainly knows it, is that in order to get in, you have to make a case for yourself to the committee. And when you schedule like that, you are taking a pass on half of your season. Good job.
Well, what we'd like to do with each of these shows is go through who we think the conference player of the year is going to be. I already mentioned earlier that my pick is Shamari Ponds from St. John's, but Rocco, do you have a pick for conference player of the year?
I do, and I'm going to trust my eyes from the game I saw last year and go with Marcus Howard from Marquette. Okay. The guy can score at will. I think he's a pretty safe pick. He's got the experience. He's got the numbers. And I'm picking Marquette to get second in the league, so that's going to be good enough for him to win the award.
Matt, you agree with him, I assume?
No, I actually disagree. Not go home, but I'm going to Eric Pascal at Nova. I think he is their next, the Josh Hart.
That's the thing.
Yeah. And then Mikal Bridges, he's the next in line to take that big leap up. I think put some massive numbers, put some good efficiency numbers. And I think Nova, I think it's going to be close between Nova and Marquette for one and two, but I think Pascal, he might take it where I think it, Hauser and Howard might sort of split it a little bit on Marquette. So I'm taking Pascal.
Pascal, Stalika.
I'm actually going to be with Matt as far as Eric Pascal, because I think, as we noted earlier, you might have Shamori Ponds in the Mustafa Heron probably splitting some of the points at St. John's, especially with Villanova expected to make another strong run.
Okay. And Tytel, how about you?
Matt, can you remind me how many points Shamori Pond scored against Marquette last February?
And he also shot 25% for three for the season last year.
He scored 44 points. Yeah. I want to pick Govan just because I think by default everything is going to go through him, but I'm going with Chad and with Ponds.
We're going with Ponds. Okay, I think we got over to Joby. I didn't ask you.
I'm actually going not with Pascal, but the other Villanova player. I think Phil Booth comes back, and he shows that everybody was picking Luke May when we did our ACC. I think Phil Booth is that equivalent. I think Villanova runs away with the conference, and that runaway with the conference will make everybody focus on Villanova, and it'll be the senior leadership of Phil Booth that everybody will focus on. And the intangible, not the 25 points a game on sort of situations. It will be the leadership of the best team in the conference, Phil Booth.
David, let me turn to you here with the next question, which is a two-parter that I want to throw everybody on it, which is, number one, who do you think wins the conference? And two, how many bids does the league get?
I think Villanova wins the conference. I think that they are going to not be as good as they've been the last three or four years, but still better than everybody else. I think four is all who get in. Villanova obviously being one of them. I really like this Providence team. They're actually the second place team. It wouldn't have been the consensus, but one of the important players for them, Alfo Diallo, he's a good scorer, a good rebounder. I'm not going to say he's going to be the player in the conference, but I think he can play a big role for them. I like Marquette a lot. And as far as the fourth team, I don't know. It might be Butler, it might be Xavier. It won't be DePaul. But I would go with either Butler or Xavier getting the fourth spot.
And Matt,
I'll throw the Johnnies into that loop. I still think you have lead in your house, but you've convinced me on the Johnnies a little bit.
Well, Matt, based on what you've told us, you have all 10 teams getting in the field, right?
No, I have five. No, you'd hear me on Butler and Xavier. They're not going to be among my teams. Okay. I have Nova and Marquette, and I think it's close. Nova maybe just edges up. I think it's actually going to be a close race at the top. And I think those two separate themselves. Providence, third. St. John's, fourth. Enough talent to where I think they'll scratch him onto like an 11-7, be an 8 or 9 seed, and then probably bounce in the first round of the tourney. And then I got Creighton just sneaking into a play-in game.
Okay. Sleek, how about you?
I think we're actually going to have a surprise winner in the Big East tournament this year and actually end up fluffing the total up to five teams. I think Villanova, Marquette, Providence more likely than not to get into the tournament, and Butler and Xavier are going to be both 50-50-ish to get in there, but obviously I wouldn't count out St. John's either to be a noisemaker.
Rocco.
Yeah, I've got Nova winning the league. And from a bracketology perspective, right now I'm looking at this isn't completely finalized, but I do have Marquette in pretty safely. And then kind of in the 9-11 seed range, I'm seeing Xavier and Butler right there. Pretty interchangeable. And then I've got St. John's penciled into a play-in game. With how gross the schedule is, I think they need to make kind of that no doubt. I don't know if they would actually get into a play-in game with that schedule, but I've got them there for now. And then I've got Providence just on the outside. They're one of my first eight out.
Yeah. I mean, I personally, I've got five teams in. I think Xavier, Butler, St. John's, and Marquette, along with Nova, who's my champion. I think Providence just out. Who we got left? Joby. We haven't gone to you, and then Tytel, but Joby first.
It's Nova winning it. Marquette two, Providence three. I think Butler it would be my fourth. I like where Stalika's thinking. And that's it. That's it.
Just four.
A lot of not even a lot of NIT, because I think there's some crap at the bottom.
I'm shocked by the lack of love for Xavier. I think that they're going to be better than any of you think. Maybe even including Stalika, but Tytel, let me shoot to you for the last but not least.
I'm still recovering from the fact that Rocco's bracketology is not finalized in mid-October. The horror.
it's a trial and error thing. Got to wait till the last possible day.
As you should, sir. I got five in, maybe six, but I think five. I really think that Villanova is not going to win the championship this year, not the Big East championship, the NCAA championship, which I know is going out on a limb, but had I said that two of the past 3 years, I'd be wrong. This year, I don't think they're going to win at all.
Okay. Well, then on that note, let's run through any final thoughts of the Big East here. And Rocco, let me start with you again.
Yeah, overall, I think we're looking at a fun year. I'm more on the side of the fence where I like more unpredictability and more teams to be able to elevate their program and not see the same teams year in and year out get in. And I think we have a real opportunity with that in the Big East, even though I'm not fully picking it with the exception being St. John's and Marquette. But it will be really interesting to see how 2 through 9 play out. Again, I'm still not giving DePaul the full credit that you are, but it's going to be a good year.
All right. Well, so much for my DePaul pick. Salika, how about you? Any final thoughts?
Well, a couple things. Number one, I'm surprised Matt didn't throw this out there, and that's Marquette is actually going to have a new arena than DePaul this year with Fiserv Forum opening up for both Marquette and the Bucks. But the second thing, we haven't gone much into scheduling yet, so I'm looking at 4 different exempt tournaments that may define how well this conference does as a whole. There's the Advocare Invitational, where Villanova more likely than not going to win it, but we also have to look at the Battle for Atlantis, where Butler is going to be facing Dayton in the first round and either Virginia or Middle Tennessee. Marquette has the preseason NIT. They have a brutal draw with that Kansas and either Louisville or Tennessee awaiting. And as far as Xavier, we'll see how they do in Maui because they get an early matchup with Auburn and either Duke or San Diego State coming up in the second round.
Well, Matt, I got to go to you. How about that Marquette-Kansas game?
I think it's a good time for Marquette to get where, like, I like Kansas is probably the number one team going into the year, either 1 or 1A with Kentucky. But youngish team putting some pieces together, we'll see. Maybe, yeah, everything doesn't go on the same page. So I'd rather play him in November than March. But I'll say continue on that. Every year under this iteration of the Big East, you've had 2 teams get protected seeds. I think it continues, and Marquette will be the second one. Probably right on the 4 line, but I think they continue. I think Marquette will be a couple of steps above everyone else. Combine that with a non-conference schedule with Kansas, Louisville, or Tennessee, Kansas State, Wisconsin home, at Indiana, and even a sneaky Buffalo home game. The opportunities will be there to build the resume. I think combine that with the 12-6 and 13-5 Big East run that I'm expecting, they'll keep the Big East tradition going into this iteration with 2 protected seeds.
Joby, any other final thoughts from you?
Yeah, now this is the second conference in a row, as I mentioned before, the Big 12 before it, where we, as a consensus, now maybe not as low as my 4, but as a consensus, pulled back on the number of bids. I don't think we're, and we've said basically the ACC will be around the same. I have a feeling we'll say the SEC will still be strong. Maybe the Pac-12 will grab some of those bids, but more likely the Big East and Big 12 pulling back on their bids means more opportunities for at least mid-major under the radar sort of opportunities. So we're going to see if that actually develops, because if it doesn't, if there aren't teams to replace them, you got to have 68 teams in this tournament. Maybe we will be digging deeper than 4, or 5. It depends on what arises in the non-multiple bid leagues or, God forsake us, the American.
Well, the American, and we may talk Mountain West at some point here also in terms of an extra bid being taken. But Tytel, how about you?
It's nice to see a conference in 2018 where a coach has not been fired over the offseason. Chris Mack left, replaced by Travis Steele, and everybody else comes back. 2 fun facts on Steele, who was an assistant to Chris at Xavier. He went to college at Butler, so I can't wait to see when he matches up against his alma mater. And quick trivia, anybody know who his half-brother is?
I did not read the production notes.
Akron head coach John Gross.
Really?
Really?
No,
are they going to play here? What's going on?
I wish.
Yeah. David, your final thoughts. Let me let you close things out for the night.
In general, I'll start off with this. I really like this conference. It's a basketball-centric conference. It's the best basketball-centric conference. And you like to see teams get out there and test themselves early in those showcase tournaments, the ones that Stalika talked about. And, Georgetown And St. John's also following suit, really putting their brand out there since there's no football. But all in all, like, I had a second thought, but I forgot what it was. I'll remember it after the show's over.
All right. Well, on that note then, without his final thought, I want to thank you for joining us here on our Hollywood Squares Brady Bunch format. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. We had John Tytel over there, John Slica, Rocco Miller, Matt Sikowski, Joby Fortson, David Griggs, all with us here. This has been our Big East preview show. We'll be back with a lot more preview shows, a lot more conferences to go. Thanks for joining us, though, and we'll talk to you again real soon.